welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Another good interview for you today lined up with Ryan Dawson, who joins us from Japan. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
It's going well. It's good to be back on Red Ice.
You bet. Exactly. You talked with Patrick before. I've never actually spoken to you. So it's a real pleasure having you here, and I've known about your work for some time, so it's good to finally have you on the show. But tell us about the work that you've been doing at ANC Report a little bit for those who don't know what you've been up to, Ryan.
Sure, Anti-Neocon Report. I guess it's mainly an anti-war site. That's sort of the theme. But I cover geopolitics mainly in the Middle East, but also the Koreas, Asia, South America, wherever it need be. But it's become a sort of alternative voice, especially for it's got a libertarian lean, I would say. But we have podcasts with different guests that cover anything from health and medicine to terrorism. And I used to have feature films. You can see them linked there. None of those links work currently because they were all associated to Vimeo, who just deleted my account out of the blue and erased all of my videos.
Yeah, and of course, that's one of the reasons, Ryan, why I wanted to have you on. I wanted to try to always bring as much attention to this as possible in terms of how we're being squeezed out by Silicon Valley and different companies. Alternative smaller platforms. It's like there's no one that where you can be anymore. It feels like if you're slightly critical of the verboten topics, and we all probably know what we're talking about here, but especially when it comes to this,
well,
like
NeoCon, because I was on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart twice. I used to be on, I call it MSNPC, but back when it was NBC, yep. and I was on CNN, and now no way, that would happen. It's become more partisan. I was like, is it just me getting older? Has it always been this way? But I think since the Iraq War on, especially, they've become less cryptic in their partisan politics between Fox, CNN, and et cetera. And the level of just the intellectual level of the news today, it's more like a circus. It's really become the tabloid news from, say, The Inquirer or something like that. You can't tell the difference between that in, say, the 80s and 90s and ABC, BN, CBS, Fox today.
Yeah, it's true. It's sad. Tell us a bit what happened specifically with Vimeo, why you were targeted. Is it the specific topics of speaking about Zionism, speaking about...
Yeah.
Influence, of course, in terms of Israel, the Israel lobby. I mean, you've been hammering a lot of these topics ever since you started many years ago now. Why did Vimeo do this? On what grounds and what happened exactly?
Their grounds was they said I broke a guideline, which I didn't, but it's a guideline inciting harassment, defamation, or violence. And none of my videos advocate violence and or defamation or harassment. They're inflammatory to somebody somewhere because it's politics. So no matter what you say, someone's not going to disagree with politics. But I've been with them for many years, and my main video on there was called The Empire Unmasked. It's been up since 2015, and they were making a lot of money from that video. They take their slice of the pie, and they just deleted everything at 3:15 in the morning out of the blue. And trying to reason with these people, it's like talking to an actual NPC. They answer you with a script. I have a specific question, like, which video violated this guideline? Like, give an example. What are you talking about? They don't do that. They just go, here's the guideline you're not supposed to break. Please read the guideline. And they write the guideline again. And I'm saying, yes, which video is advocating violence or has defamation or harassment? Where? None of my videos did that. But that's not why they really censored it. I think probably after this synagogue shooting, the Zionist favorite thing to do in the world is to conflate themselves with Jews in general. And so if I'm criticizing Israel, that's somehow akin to inciting violence towards Jews, even though I'm very clear in my videos to explain it. This is a state. And this should be unnecessary. If I'm criticizing North Korea, no one should take away from that Asians are bad or Koreans are bad. I'm talking about a country. But they know that. And we've seen this recently in Al Jazeera's expose on the lobby where they sit there in focus groups and say, let's just call them a hate group because that's their only argument. You cannot possibly justify, you know, like since March, they've killed over 230 Palestinian unarmed civilians, where they just every Friday they shoot kids at the border, just shoot them in the head and kill them. Israeli snipers shooting children. It's murder tourism. But there doesn't seem to be a red line they can cross that will bother the United States. But because of Twitter and Vimeo and social media, for the first time, Westerners are seeing this and saying, wait a minute, did you just shoot that kid and high-five each other and laugh about it and film it like a trophy? Yes. And a lot of us are saying, well, yeah, they've been doing that. You're just now able to watch it, you know. And that's why they're cracking down on social media sites. They don't want anyone to see what Israel does.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the biggest issue right now in the wake of Pittsburgh. But it's almost like this was ready. It was already like they just needed an excuse to roll this out. I mean, we've seen this since. Yes, of course, it's been censorship and stuff like that. But I would say, Ryan, that since Trump got in, there's been a number of things that have happened, including, of course, Charlottesville, right? That there were all these, mm-hmm. like, you know, events that occurred that was so convenient to the establishment and to the ability to push back and fight back, in some cases against, of course, white nationalism, but in some cases just anti-globalism, you know, and people who criticize the establishment, that all these things have been in the wings and waiting, and we've seen an increasing clampdown ever since, you know, Trump and then Charlottesville and then these shootings that have occurred. And for every of these tragedies that occur, a little bit more is taken away from our ability to criticize the wider system and globalism.
I agree. It seems, this is my speculation, but I agree. I think they had this waiting. They were waiting for an opportunity and already had plans on who they were going to take down, because myself, Killstream, Ralph Retord, you know, there's a big list of people, I guess, who had sort of a like-minded message that all got removed on the same day. And last March, when my YouTube was removed, Allison Weir from If Americans Knew, very similar site to mine, they're strictly Palestine-focused. I'm more of a geopolitical thing, but we had that, and we were both erased on the same day, March 4th, which is also the day that
from YouTube or which
from YouTube.
YouTube, yeah.
From YouTube.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I had 12 years worth of videos removed there, although the first 2 years of that, I had two names. So this was like my backup names and my backup name. About 10 years of videos gone. And I said, why? They just gave me 3 strikes all in 24 hours and then removed all my videos. I was actually on a plane from D.C. coming back from the anti-APAC conference to L.A. And because of the weather and stuff, I ended up in San Francisco. I get there, I land, and my Skype and messages are just lit up, like, you know, 99 on everything. And what's going on? All my work had been taken down. I was able to retrieve my YouTube videos, most of them, by going through trusted flaggers. But it took until April 23rd until I got back on YouTube. So that was a lot of lost revenue.
And how long was that?
You know, from March 4th to April 23rd. So almost 2 months.
Yeah.
Almost 2 months. But, it was the stress of it, saying, am I going to get this back or not? And what am I going to do? And because of that, I had backed up a lot of things and moved them to Vimeo. Even if they weren't public, I just put them there so that they wouldn't get destroyed. And then my Vimeo has been erased, so. Now, it's ironic, I have YouTube, but not Vimeo. It's usually the other way around. YouTube's hit me 3 times. They hit me in the very beginning, I uploaded 1 video and they erased it, so that didn't matter. So a few months later I tried, and I had an account from about 2006 to December 2008, and I uploaded this film called War by Deception, and boy, they didn't like that, so they erased my account and all my videos. And I couldn't make a new account for like 6 months, so I just used my girlfriend's, and then I had that one. I have another backup one. I have my wife's YouTube, my babysitter's YouTube, like all these different YouTubes just in case.
So, well, you have to these days.
You gotta. And yeah. I'm not saying anything against any guidelines. And they use the pretext, like first they would go after people like me, and they would go after, let's say, either white nationalists or even anybody. They're not even white nationalists, like anybody
just
that's
remotely
opposed to
anti-globalist, basically.
Like if I'm against legal immigration, which I am,
yeah.
then that's the same thing as like, well, it must be for racial reasons. In my case, it's not. And I don't care if it is. I don't think anybody should be censored, but in my case, it isn't. And, I think everyone should be able to protect their cultural integrity and economic systems. You can't have social welfare and open borders at the same time. It's just stupid. It's a recipe for disaster. You don't bring the third world up. You only bring the first world down.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I say, yes, we should quit bombing people and not have the IMF giving out predatory loans and all the things that create the conditions that cause migrants in the first place. There's several things we need to do. But, man, you can't have a nuanced opinion or discussion about that because the NPCs just say, Nazi, Hitler, sexist, misogynist, yeah. Just throwing out epithets that mean nothing. And so that's their pretext is hate speech or this or that. And I don't even think it's hateful anyway. Like, it's just, you're not allowed to have nuance on the internet anymore.
Well, it's like they picked this because it drags along so many liberals, so many people that are emotionally programmed to think that anything slightly offensive is bad. And, you know, I think that there's a large slew of people that basically agree with this, whether they understand the dynamics of actually criticizing people in a legitimate way or not, but the masses tend to go along with that. They're like, well, of course we can't have, you know, we can't have hate speech and stuff like that. But as you say, when you get into the nitty and gritty of these things, like, well, can you actually define it? What part specifically? I feel that there needs to be something, at least if we're going to be kicked off these platforms, where at least they need to be held accountable to the degree that they prove exactly what it is on what grounds that they kicked us off, right?
It is very hypocritical standards, too. I mean, if you're going to, like, saying their wage gap is a myth is not sexist. It's just factual.
Right.
Like then you got to have some room to start explaining, and you don't get that opportunity. These sanctimonious types are so excited to find a witch to burn, which is sexism, racism, xenophobia, bigotry, whatever, because it makes them feel good about themselves. It makes them feel like a good person to find these things that are pretty well established as bad in our society. And they go, aha, I found something. Let's just call this racist. But I look at it and I go, okay, so you're going to be mad at, let's say, President Trump because he uses lewd language, says grab her by the pussy, or I think one time he said, they're rapists, talking about there are rapists coming from Mexico, not Mexicans are rapists, but they changed it anyway. Okay, you're mad about that, but when Obama and Hillary invade Libya, hand the country over to Al-Qaeda, hundreds of thousands of people are, dead, starving, raped, etc. And right now, in the current year, they have open-air slave markets where young boys and men are sold as property. $400 you can buy a person in Libya. They have slavery. But they want a virtue signal about the Confederate flag from the 1860s right. Or accuse somebody of being racist because they had wrong think on the internet. Meanwhile, your government murdered thousands of Africans, some of them women, some of them gay, some of them whatever category you care about, were destroyed. We armed Al-Qaeda, and now they have slavery, actual cattle slavery right now in Libya, not a peep.
No,
MSNBC, no. For an entire year, it's been since July of 2017 since they mentioned Yemen. I don't know how many times they talk about Trump or Russiagate, or any of these nonsense stories, fake rape, dud bombs, whatever, not talking about Yemen. So how much do you care about minorities and women and all these things you virtue signal about? Because there's a real situation of thousands, tens of thousands of people eating grass, dying of dysentery, cholera. That's happening. They act like, what? It's just not on the news. It's not on NBC. At least CNN and Fox, like when 50 kids were blown up on a school bus, they covered that story, but only because a CNN reporter happened to be right there, and it was unavoidable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for over a year, they didn't mention Yemen, and MSNBC still won't talk about it.
Yeah, it's true. The hypocritical aspect of this is extraordinary, but that also demonstrates, and, you know, it's been said before, but it's like they really don't, in many cases, believe some of these liberal values and everything that they push. they have adopted those because they're effective in dragging large swaths of people with them in order to criticize a specific opposition or shutting certain things down. Or, you know, of course, there's people on MSNBC or NBC that you know, believe these liberal values or whatever, but it's selective outrage. And it's just whatever yeah. happens to benefit them at a specific time that matters. And then in the greater scope of things, screw that. As you say, Libya, total disaster. I mean, Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, that's what, and now Syria, of course, is what led to the migrant crisis. And you don't even hear from the left anymore that wars are bad and it creates these conditions to begin with. All we hear is open your borders and let them all in after we've bombed them. I mean, this is idiotic, you know?
And it's not just some blowback. This was planned in policy papers about the migrant crisis and how yeah. we could use migrants as a weapon. Israel's been talking about it for decades. Yes, you're right about Syria. It's selective outrage. I call it recreational outrage as well, because it's totally insincere. You can't be mad about these things. Say, like, if you're going to virtue signal against neo-Nazis and then support actual neo-Nazis in Ukraine and say in Russia invaded Crimea and stuff, like, have some consistency in your outrage. You know, like, if you kind of pick an ideology to bash, you can't then adopt that same ideology. Oh, well, in this geographic area, suddenly it's okay.
Yeah, it's true. Exactly. I was trying to pull up a couple of articles about that, but there was a few that wrote about that in terms of the weaponization, if you will, of migration and how it's being used and stuff like that. And we know, of course, that Israel they don't allow any refugees into their own country. This is the stuff. This is on the grounds where we had a video terminated and got a strike and we couldn't live stream anymore, Ryan, because it's like we were criticizing Israel. Again, I don't even know if we can talk about it anymore, but I'm going to continue
Be careful.
Yeah. It's like there is it's a organization internationally, an NGO. And it's again, it was on the grounds of hate and harassment, but it's like we didn't touch on any race or ethnicity in the video. We didn't talk about a religious group. We talked about a specific organization, yes, from Israel, and then criticized Israel for their own immigration policies as a point of view of hypocritical and double standards. And that's about it. But it's like, it's so effective to shut down people like us because of that. And it's legitimized in most people's eyes because they say, oh, well, that's hate speech. So they wouldn't even think about defending it or standing up for free speech in that regard. That's what's so – it angers me that it's like there's so few that stands up for the people that are being shut down and censored right now. And again, it's just a matter of time before they are swept up in this too, right?
Israel declares itself a Jewish state and has laws for Jews and laws for everyone else. There's no intermarriage. They have Jewish-only colonies in the West Bank. I mean, and so – that's actually hateful, and it's not just like a belief. Okay, someone's racist. All right. This is something they're acting on, where they're actively ethnically cleansing minorities, set up a pecking order even among Jews, like which Jews are, you know, well, are you Ashkenazi Jew, Sephardic Jew? Or they have a pecking order, and they have settlements paid for by U.S. tax dollars mainly that are for Jews and Jews only. No one else legally is allowed to live in a settlement besides a Zionist Jew. So they have a little ethnic enclaves. So they're guilty of what they criticize everyone else of, and that includes foreign policy, too. They say Iran wants to wipe them off the map while Palestine is being wiped off the map. They say Iran's building nuclear weapons while Israel actually illegally and secretly built nuclear weapons by spying on and stealing material from the United States.
That's right, so yeah.
They say Syria has gas. They use white phosphorus and gas from 73 to now. They use depleted uranium, and so, you know,
projection.
It's pure projection. Yep. Exactly. Yep. It's the number one thing they love to project, and they're always the perpetual victims.
And it's preemptively, too, right, that if you go ahead and kind of charge others with what you just have done or going to do, when you try to turn the tables, it seems ludicrous and ridiculous. Like, no, mm-hmm. we've already accused you of that. You can't take our idea and do, you know, say that we're doing this to them. But there is a good, I want to play that. Let's just play that now, the BDS clip.
Right.
You alerted me to this too. Let me turn off the volume here so we can hear this clip. But this is about how they view, and it's the connection to, you know, the
BDS is boycott divestment sanctions.
Exactly. I was just going to mention that. And of course, it's like, you know, very, it's a movement they're extremely afraid of, apparently, and it's effective, I guess. But here's a clip from that.
That bridges Jewish organizations
yes.
in the diaspora.
Absolutely.
It's a psychological campaign involving spying and smears.
You discredit the messenger as a way of discrediting the message.
Just stay on message. And what is that message? BDS is a hate movement.
While our reporter monitored pro-Israel groups, he was asked to go undercover for the lobby.
You're going into enemy territory. Not for everybody.
So this is what it is. It's continuously just saying it's hate speech, and there seems to be no ability for anyone to question that or have that defined for regarding anything. It's a perfect weapon that you can use to terminate your ideological enemies, right?
Yes, because in any sort of TOS agreement, whatever, saying something is hateful or inflammatory, or whatever, is very subjective. And so it's a subjective standard that is selectively enforced based on political bias. And there's certain things they hate. They hate criticism of Zionism. And there's also the Silicon Valley clique that doesn't want any support for Donald Trump. Because you have some people, like I call them Jonestown, like Alex Jones, who's a total Zionist, supports Israel and everything, still gets everything removed because he supported Donald Trump. Donald Trump is about 90% Zionist, but that's not enough. He'll go with them on Iran. He'll move the embassy. He'll give them billions of dollars. He capitulates to almost all of their demands, but he drew the line on Syria. He stopped aiding Al-Qaeda in Syria, and he will not support ISIS. He hates Al-Qaeda more than he loves the Zionists, and they're losing their minds because these are the kind of people that have 9 cards out of 10, and they got to have that last one. They have to have everything. So there's been a sustained anti-Trump message in the Zog media, as well as an anti-Russian message, same reason. Putin has defended Syria. And so they're like, oh, they must be colluding together, which is total nonsense. We have sanctions on Russia. Like our relations with Russia are pretty bad. But Russiagate disappeared for the midterms. Did you notice that?
They moved on to
Rapegate of Kavanaugh. Which now one of these women have come forward and say, okay, I lied.
Exactly, it was a fraud. Yep, of course, and we knew this. We saw that coming. It's amazing.
It's like the people who just got caught painting swastikas. And again, you know, it's the victims themselves. It's the anti-hate, what they call the name of the organization, but the top of it, president or whatever, you know, committee leader, they did it themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because it benefits them. And there's been so many of these hoaxed hate crimes, and that's what I'm saying. It's like it's a perfect weapon, and that's why they keep using it. And that's, of course, also why it's super beneficial to them, as you said before, to therefore associate any criticism of Israel or even globalists or even the establishment or Hollywood with people of Jewish extraction, because then they can say, well, it is racially based, right, when the reality is not. I actually wanted to play another clip, Ryan. Let's take a look at that, because it's a perfect example of how they are beginning to police the language now and how they're beginning to saying, what words can you use? And, I mean, it's super dangerous because it basically means that we can no longer criticize those who truly hold power, right? I mean, this is what, historically, this is what journalists used to do. This is what movements of social justice used to do, right? They'd see where is the power, make sure that you can criticize that, be that through freedom of speech or whatever. But here's a perfect example. Samantha Bee, some washed-up, stupid comedian, talking about what certain words actually mean. Listen to this.
Trump and many other Republicans reacted to the shooting by condemning anti-Semitism. Always nice when we can agree that some hate crimes are bad. But the truth is, the Republican Party tolerates anti-Semitism and benefits from it. Mainstream conservatives would never say anything negative about Jewish people outright, but there are other words they use, like coastal elites, globalists, Hollywood liberals, or John Leibowitz. And currently, the biggest, loudest dog whistle is George Soros.
Yeah, see, George Soros. You can't even, like, I mean, these are real people. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of money. They're meddling internationally in people's, in countries' affairs. They screw up, you know, countries in some cases. They crash their economies. And now these liberal lunatics at mainstream media is telling us that you can't use these words because it really means that you're like the Pittsburgh shooter. But these are the grounds that they're taking away our right to criticize true power in the world by these associations that they're making.
it's a common thing for identitarians when you're language policing, if you want to get into language, I'm pretty good at that. When you have a category which has a subset, you can't just reverse those. It's kind of like all dogs are animals, but not all animals are dogs. But that's not saying A doesn't equal A. It's just saying that, well, dogs are a subset of animals. So that's why that example doesn't work. And coastal elites or whatever, yes, there's going to be plenty of Jews there or in Hollywood or something.
Sure.
But you can't reverse it. Say, well, look at all the Jews that don't own any banks or Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to remove the emotional smoke from it, what I give an example of North Korea. If I criticize Pyongyang or something, that's not code for being anti-Asian or anti-North Korean. I'm talking about the government. And that is, they do have a three-tier system in North Korea. And the elite or whatever, you could say the Pyongyang elite that live in the capital or and surround the administration, they have one type of life, and the plebs that work the farms and the gulags have another set of life. So you can do it on geography. You can do it by city, like, or Hollywood or something like that. You can do it by occupation. It's not a code word for an ethnic group, even if 100% of them are North Koreans, you know, or close to, you know, I don't know, whatever percent are Jews in Hollywood. It doesn't work, but they try to use these and say, oh, see, you're saying this. It's like, it's as stupid as saying, criticizing the CIA is a code for being anti-white because most people in the CIA are white or something.
Right.
No, it doesn't work that way. Well, right. Most people in Hollywood are Jews. That doesn't mean most Jews are in Hollywood. And look at all the whites that are not in the CIA. But they don't understand the difference between category and subsets.
And some of them do, and they're doing that because it's beneficial to them. You know, and it's like, the association is there. Let's use it now. We'll just say that it's all anti-Semitism. And again, in the wake of Pittsburgh, it's a free for all. It's just open. They're going to, you know, you give them an inch, they grab your whole arm. And now they're coming for everyone that ever has said anything bad about anything. And the relation to, as you pointed out, how migration is being used, which organizations is behind that, how Israel is treating that. It's all off the table now. Everything.
Gaddafi was the cork in the barrel, and they removed him and the immigrants. But these are not Syrian refugees. Some are Syrian refugees, but the majority of these migrants are not from anywhere close to Syria. But the pretext is, look at the drowning Syrian boy, which is absolutely horrible, but that's got nothing to do with hordes of migrants from Tunisia or Pakistan. Like, that's irrelevant. Yes, there's war in Syria, and I'm opposed to the war in Syria, but these migrants are not refugees. But they're always labeled as refugees in Europe and dreamers in the United States.
Dreamers.
If you have 90% working-age adult males, are not dreamers. These aren't a bunch of children looking for honest work. There are some children, and you can cherry-pick your examples.
Few and far apart, but they are there, sure. Yeah.
Sure, but you got to... The way to fix things is not, that's not going to fix it. All you're doing is relocating poverty.
Yeah,
you're not
absolutely.
Changing
yeah,
anything.
That's right. And if for any politician that complains on poverty or complains on, you know, bad conditions in America, whatever, to import a whole new subset of people who, I mean, you could even take the liberal angle to this, and some liberals do, but very few do, that you effectively are also kind of creating a new slave class, right? I mean, it has to be declared that it is beneficial for these people to come into a country where they can get jobs and stuff like that. But the reality is, Ryan, that this helps to drive down the wages for American workers. It puts them out of a job. And for the left, for the traditional socialists, if you will, from these workers' parties and whatnot, to advocate for mass migration of large swaths of people from incompatible cultures that help drives down the wages of their own people they're supposed to represent with a straight face is just beyond me.
Well, I mean, why not get rid of NAFTA? That's what wrecked 30% of the GDP of Mexico. If you're going to allow government-subsidized agriculture from the United States to move in tariff-free into Mexico, so the Walmarts, the McDonald's, and giant volume discount agribusinesses go in there, what happens to all the so-called fruit pickers and agrarians? They move into the cities because their niche of work has been replaced. And if you have an influx of surplus labor in the cities, what happens to wages? Because workers become expendable, they drop. And so people migrate. So why not strike it at the source? If you didn't have these screwed up trade policies, et cetera, and I could get into the drug war and all that too, but if you fixed that, there wouldn't be so many migrants. Is that, there's nothing wrong with the real estate in Mexico or south of there. It's policies that need to change. And leftist policies don't work. The welfare state doesn't work. And it's not really free trade if one side has government subsidies and the other side doesn't. That's not free trade. That's government subsidized industry. They're not on the free market. They're getting money directly from farm subsidies. And it's very hard to change the United States because you have all these Midwest states that have two senators apiece who are very, very tied to big agriculture. Well, that's why you have corn syrup and, you know, there's a lot of bad things that come of this. But if you try to take a serious look at farm subsidies, they bring up the example of World War One and Grapes of Wrath and, oh, we'll all starve. It's just not true. But it's very hard to change things because of the way the Senate's structured and the way most of our where most of our agriculture is and how easy it is to influence the states with small populations. We could, but it's you can't even get to that part of it because we can't get past the children dreamers and building a wall and all that. No one's looking at the causes of, like, okay, how come there's so many migrants in the first place from this country? How about this one? If Hillary hadn't toppled Honduras, you know, and had a coup d'etat for her own personal business ties, they wouldn't be in the situation they're in, and there wouldn't be so many migrants. But, always start the story in the middle. And I can sit there and explain each place if I have enough time, but no one wants to listen to it. And the videos I had about it are gone because Vimeo deleted my account.
Before we move on, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about in terms of the context of, is it the migration and ultimately replacement of Europeans in America and in Europe too, that's the ultimate goal, or is that still a side effect? I think that's an interesting discussion to have. We can listen to another few clips. But before we move on from Vimeo, tell us about the revenue as well. You had it. So you have a pro plan with them. You have a subscription. You pay them money to be able to house your videos there and do these pay-per-view kind of things. But you said that they ended up confiscating the money that you had saved on Vimeo. Tell us about that.
I'd add with Europe, too, sometimes it's other Europeans. Like, it's mostly Ukrainians that are flooding into Germany. So it doesn't even have to be non-Europeans to be a weapon. But most of the time it is. I'm just saying not always. Yeah, Vimeo, September was my biggest month because I guess my most famous film is this 5-hour detailed documentary about 9/11. And it's not one of these Alex Jones or things. I don't obsess about the physics of the buildings or anything. I got into the real who, what, and why. And it's called The Empire in Mass. And in there, I gave the examples of Iran-Contra, of creating Al-Qaeda with Mujahideen and aiding Al-Qaeda and Jabhat al-Nusra and these terrorist groups in Syria, which was happening all the way until July of 2017. So if you know we worked with Al-Qaeda, actually created Al-Qaeda before 9/11, and you're working with Al-Qaeda after 9/11, admitted by our own DIA and others, but you want to think during 9/11 there was no relationship. And so I went and explained all this in detail, and it was my best-selling film, and I had other films on why is Africa so poor when it's the most research-rich continent in the world. I had videos on Syria, on Palestine. I had videos covering so many topics, and they were unique, and it was unique information. It wasn't just reiterating, like, hey, did you know the Federal Reserve is bad? Like, it wasn't base-level nonsense. I really did a deep dive on these things, took over a decade of my life to make these films. And my largest month of revenue, where I was on a lot of shows, I think I was on Red Ice in September, I was on all these different shows talking about my films, made a lot of sales, and they just took all that revenue and they were supposed to pay me. And then they wait till October 30th. So it was the 31st here. I'm a day ahead in Japan. So the very last day of October, they decide to erase everything. So they're not paying for September, and they're also not paying for 30 days of October. So basically all of October. So 2 months worth of revenue was taken away, including my biggest month of the year. So I lost over $5,000, or I didn't lose it, but I was supposed to be paid that. And I'm not. And I was counting on that revenue because I'm making a film about the Kennedy assassination, and it was assuming a combined revenue of my Patreon and general video sales, and the general video sales was wiped out. And I really wanted to have that for November because this is the, you know, the anniversary of the killing of JFK. And like it or not, that's when people pay attention to these things. And now I'm not going to be able to do that. Like now I had to get servers in different countries and hosts and SSLs and, you know, all that and recreate my own VOD and test it. And I'm in the process of doing that now. And I did raise the first day from Super Chat. So I got about $700 back from the 3,000 taken in September. And then subsequently from direct PayPal donations and Patreon and other Super Chats, I've raised about 1,400, maybe 1,500 because they take 30% back, but I'm still pretty shy of $5,000 that was gone. But I do have enough to start buying up servers and all that and putting my videos back online so I can get a revenue stream again. But,
right.
You know, I'm not going to stop. They want me to quit. And I tell them, I know this is for criticizing the Israeli state. You just erased my life's work and stole all this money from me. Do you think I'm going to be less critical of Zionism?
Oh, yeah.
In the future?
You're just going to disappear. All of these people that they're censoring is going to go away and shut up and never say a word about these things again.
It's like, I mean, they can shut me up for about a month, but now, like, I'm on this show partly because I got censored from Vimeo,
right.
You know, and I have an even bigger audience than before. So,
yeah.
And that's why I'm putting this in the background all the time. And I put the leaks, it was perfect timing. Al Jazeera came out with their, they did a years of investigation. This guy graduated from university in the United Kingdom, wrote all these pro-Israel papers and stuff just so that he could get into AIPAC. And he's filming his conversation with these people. And these people are monsters. I mean, they straight up admit, oh, yeah, let's just call them a hate group. Oh, you know what? A swastika would be good right about now. Like, they know. They know how it works. Like, on the day of the voting of BDS, suddenly some white supremacists come and draw swastikas, and they're actually manji, which is a backward swastika. It's a religious symbol.
It's a Hindu symbol. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's originally from India, yeah. But,
yeah.
Even, like, it's funny, in tourist maps, they have, it's called manji, like the 777. They're all over maps as marks for religious sites in Japan for Shinto. And I see some Western tourist freak.
That's amazing.
Because Japan was German allies during that war.
Exactly. So. Yep, that's true. Exactly. And that's the thing, too. It's a kind of, if we're going to the deeper psychological aspects of this, too, Ryan, that it's like there's also, they've managed to whip up a sense of mass hysteria around some of these issues that are like, you know, one of the videos that was censored was I was talking to the guys in the Nordic resistance movement, right? They're openly national socialists and stuff like that. But it's like this idea that I'm daring just to have an open conversation with them. I'm not hating on them. I don't agree with everything they're saying, but I agree with some things that they're saying, right? And it's this idea that it's like they're hysterical about you just like gaining some level of degree of interest in any of these topics, which they've deemed to be completely forbidden.
How dare you talk to these people?
Yeah.
I've talked to, I'll be careful, historical revisionists, and they don't like that. And I'm not agreeing with them. I just want to hear, okay, you seem like an intelligent person. Why do you believe this? And I hear pretty good arguments and all. I'll talk to ethnostaters and stuff, but I've also been able to change their minds because nobody reasons with them. They just yell Nazi and drop the mic, and no one will actually talk to them. Some still disagree. Some I've been able to change their minds, but we can't even have that discussion at all.
No,
because why would you
totally
get on the platform?
Yeah.
Like, because I want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
I've talked to communists. I've talked to Zionists. As an argument, I've talked to all manner of walks of life. I've even talked to liberal Democrats, but you know. Yeah. And they actually bother me more than anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's funny, isn't it?
I think they're the most racist group. I'm like, look, there are differences on a macro level between races. That's no reason to judge people as individuals. But what liberals do is they actually have, it's not a belief, it's state policies. Like, affirmative action is racist. It's racist to Asians. It's racist to whites. It's racist to the minorities you're trying to help because you're undercutting their credibility because nobody knows if they're the most qualified person or just the most qualified person in their category. Like, and it's not minorities pushing these things. It's white liberals. And they have this paternalistic racism when it comes to Africa. I go blue in the face trying to explain how food aid and all these like do-gooder policies are dismantling Africa, but they don't care. They want to replace what works with what sounds good. And what sounds good, so let's just throw money at it. And that doesn't work.
Right, and what feels good to them, right? It's this right. That IQ intelligence, I guess, overall, in terms of rationally dealing with certain situations, have just gone totally out the window because it's more about pleasing these kindergartners emotionally. That's how I see it. And if they don't get their way, they're totally hysterical and they scream and they throw a fit and temper tantrums and they just don't know how to stop. And there's this shrieking mob that's running things right now.
There's the shrieking mob and then behind that or whatever you could say are the ones who know and don't care. And I'll give a real quick example. Like, let's just pick like Zambia or whatever, an African nation. I go, if you're selling shoes and I open up a shoe store next to you and I just give away shoes, how many shoes are you going to sell?
Probably zero. None. Yep.
So are you going to stay in the shoe business?
No.
Probably
it's
not.
Totally impossible.
What happens if you're an African farmer and I come down giving away free food, all altruistically because you need it? What happens to the agrarian society?
Yeah, it collapses. Disappears.
Yep. You're going to use that land for cash crops instead of agriculture. You're going to grow rubber, or maybe you're not even growing anything. You're going to dig in it and find copper. You're going to do something else other than sell food because you can't compete with the freebies, right? Well, then in the long run, what happens is you dismantle their agency and make them dependent on food aid. And how do they pay for that? By leasing their land out to foreigners who use it for what they want to use it. And even when they grow, like, say, cocoa or something, it goes to Europe. And this is not just like a hypothetical, like Glencore Commodity Company will sell to its own subsidiary at a loss to avoid taxes, ship it back to Europe, turn it into chocolate, and sell it back to Africa at loans that the IMF goes with a deal it made with some despot that, you know, is basically threatened or bribed into take it or die. And, you know, we can look at these things, and I had a long film about Africa going case by case and showing the shenanigans that happen. It's not bad because, oh, they're just all low IQ dindu or something like that. There's a lot of other factors. Most of it's domestic corruption, but the liberal policies are absolutely destructive. And then they have the gall to get on there and say, opposing these things makes you racist.
Right. Yeah.
You're the one that thinks they can't grow food on their own and are helpless and have to be taken care of by you, the paternalistic, you know, UN agencies and stuff. I'm like, you guys are destroying them the same way socialism destroys any other place of any other race. That didn't work and doesn't work in Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, Russia, China, anywhere. The end result is you're poor, regardless of your racial makeup. So, but whatever, they don't want to get into that. So.
And then there is the aspect, of course, a lot of aid and stuff. We did a show about this. It's pretty interesting. But a lot of the aid that the West does give to Africa, and it's millions and hundreds and hundreds of millions, and even Sweden, a country of like, you know, 9-10 million people, is giving billions to a whole continent every year, mm-hmm. you know, in aid and stuff like this. But it does drive population. It does drive a global population growth. Of course, Africa, if this is
right.
true, if the projections are true. And
you don't want global population that's dependent on a foreign.
No, and ballooning.
State, like, yeah.
And not only ballooning, that this is the driver to why they migrate out of Africa, right? Basically, Europe is going to be, I mean, Macron talks about these bankers and these elites that talk about this all the time, like, oh, we're going to have a shared destiny with Africa and just hundreds of millions are going to be coming to Europe and we're all going to mix and it's all going to be wonderful. You know, it's like all these things, I see them tying together in a very distinct globalist agenda, which is basically to destroy nations, homogenize the population, create a common or a shared identity, I guess, because it'll be easier controlled by the globalists. And then you'll have a world government on top of that, pretty much. But it's clear to me that...
Be careful saying globalist. Be careful with the word. Ooh.
I know. It's true. How are we going to be able to criticize what we see happening in the world without the ability to express it with words that make sense, right?
Sweden is a sad case, you know. And I point out, their GDP, they're about the same size as North Carolina, but they don't make as much money as North Carolina. IQ is about the same or whatever, but Sweden is just opening the gates, and you can't, it's totally naive to think that people from as far away as Africa or Central Asia or whatever are going to move to Sweden and learn to speak Swedish and adopt their customs values. It's not, you can't possibly do that, and these people are not interested in assimilation. There's this entitlement attitude. And it's the same kind of attitude that made them fail where they're from. A lot of African states are highly tribal, and that kind of rigid, ethnic nepotism or whatever, it doesn't work. It doesn't work there. It doesn't work in the Middle East. Like, if you look at Iraq, for example, you got Kurds and Sunni and Shia. There, it's more divided around religion more than ethnic group, but same difference. If they had identified as Iraqis, rather than as Iraqi Sunnis, Iraqi Kurds, Iraqi Shia, they wouldn't have had all this turmoil, and didn't until 2003. Sunni and Shia used to intermarry, and it wasn't an issue. It becomes an issue when you get a government that's involved in religious or ethnic nepotism that distributes jobs only to its own clique or whatever. And those are the kind of people that are coming to Sweden, to Germany, to what have you. They're not interested in becoming Swedes or German, or learning the language or the culture or the religion. They're there to maintain their own rigid beliefs, and even within among each other, still in their same tribes and all. And they bring the violence and stupidity and failed ideas that didn't work in the third world and won't work in the first. You're relocating poverty. If you want to change the outcome and have more successful things, you have to have people that have parenting and philosophies and ideologies and on economics and across the board that are conducive to success. And they don't. Like, if you change the ideology, you'll change the outcome. I don't think it's like biologically like ingrained and irreversible. I think you can totally be a minority and practice free market capitalism and succeed. Like, look at Japan. Like, it's night and day from World War II to now. It ended up surpassing every country in Europe, despite being completely Asian and having a feudalistic shogun system before. Look at North and South Korea. Same race, same language, basically the same lack of religion. One has 10% of the population starving to death and no electricity at night outside the capital. The other is the 11th biggest economy in the world. Like, ideology matters. You can't fix everything, and there will be some differences that are probably biological, but there's plenty of things that you can fix that they're not interested in even looking at. And I'm like, dude, the third world sucks because it has third world ideas. Like, you've got to change these systems, especially this nanny state liberal escapades. And they think the opposite. They think they're the most altruistic, and they have the most sanctimonious, dogmatic propaganda that you cannot criticize without being called xenophobic, racist, or whatever. I'm not against Islam. I'm not against whatever race. I'm not against geography, unless you're a Yankee. That's not it. It's like, look, these ideas don't work. You cannot foster, like, even within the United States, they have Ebonics, right? If you do not speak proper grammar, you're not going to do well. And you cannot just ignore or incentivize somebody to say, it's okay that you don't speak your own native language. You can just say it all the wrong way because that's black or something. What's black about it? That shit started it recently. You know, a lot of the so-called black culture is from MTV, from certain ethnic group-owned Sumner Redstone's propaganda of like, yeah, we want you to sag your pants and act like this in 40s and hoes and weed and whatever. And like, that's not a good product to serve. But to attach race to it, be like, yeah, that's how these people act. Like, you're causing a whole generation of young kids to think like, oh, I'm supposed to be part of this identity or whatever. And it's very destructive. But they act like, Oh, no, it's just the opposite. You're supposed to celebrate all these degenerate behaviors,
yeah,
and it's
yeah.
the exact opposite thing.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to, obviously, behavior prop. As you say, I think that there are some things which you can't change, but let's assume that we had a fairly functioning, rational system applied
like
to most countries.
Men will always be more violent than women.
There will be different.
It's biological.
Right.
Men are going to be more violent than women, at least certain kinds of violence.
Mm.
But you have to look at it and say, okay, if you're talking about violent crime, and there's more violent crime by blacks than whites in the United States, for example. However, murders are at a, you know, 1 out of 100,000, you know, per population. You get, you know, 60 to whatever a year in certain cities or something, besides Chicago. But you're looking at then, even if between men and women, okay, yeah, men are committing, let's say, 95% of the violence, but you're talking about 1/100th of 1% of men who are doing anything violent, which means 99.99% of the men are not murdering, raping, stealing, etc., which means 99.99% of the white men and 99.998% of black men, like nobody is committing. It's all this very small slither of any society actually doing those things, you know, but they look at the slither and there are gaps, but then you have to remind yourself that still, what about the other 99.99% that aren't doing that? But people don't look at statistics that way. But you know, you can't really change that. You can't really be like, make women more violent or men less violent. It is what it is. But you can change the policies that lead to those violent acts by everybody. You know, I don't think getting rid of guns was good in Chicago.
They're trying, though. They're trying to make us all the same. They're trying to just have this tabula rasa kind of attitude, right, that everything is just going to be clean slate and it's going to be – we're all going to be the same. And that's the issue with it too, right?
That's part of Frankfurt School. And it
absolutely, sure. Yeah.
It's kind of this myth of symmetry equals equality. Like they want to say like, well, symmetry is equality, so men and women should behave the same way. Like a woman should have the same degree of, I don't know, sexual partners or drive or whatever as a man. It's just, you're denying evolution. You know, that's not equality. That's an outlier.
Yeah.
Like, people are, sex is bimodal, gender is bimodal, and biological. Nowadays, the crybullies have it where, like, oh no, you identify as a gender, and they base that on what? On, like, doing girly things or manly things, which are cultural. They're like, look, penis and vagina determines your sex, not whether or not you like to play with dolls or football or whatever. But they're thinking, oh, I'm in the wrong body. I'm like, no, you're not. You're just an effeminate man. Be that guy then. It's okay. But they're like, no, it doesn't match the role. And that's the funny thing, is they're calling everyone else judgmental and closed-minded, yet they have this rigid view of what a man's supposed to be or a woman's supposed to be, and if you don't fit that, then you just switch genders, rather than just saying, how about there's a wide view of way that a man can behave or a woman can behave, but you're still a man and woman based on biology, not your taste, right?
Right.
You get it all upside down.
Yep.
And it's the same thing with race and blah, blah, blah. They'll say, inequality, look at the Asians earn more than Hispanics, whatever. I go, okay, let's look at the age range. How many Japanese Americans are over 50? Like the majority. How many Hispanics? They're all teenagers. Guess who earns more? 50-year-olds. Maybe it's not racism. Maybe it's just basic demographic statistics. Like teenagers never earn as much as older people ever. You know.
Well, they should. So they,
yeah,
you know,
well, some
everything,
of them do.
everything. Yeah, everything needs to be this. Exactly. It's like this. They need equality of outcome, right? Not equality of opportunity, and it's a huge difference.
Equality of input, right? They're not going to put the work in. They're like a lot. The reason a lot of Asians have success in the United States is one, there's a filter. You're not getting the average Asian. You're getting someone, at least one person in the family is bilingual. That's usually above average intelligence. They have a very strict work ethic, just like you could say Germans do, and maybe
sure.
somebody yeah. next to Germany doesn't. You know. And that works. That those kind of strategies of studying, saving, working hard, usually, you know,
but there is something evolutionary to that. I'm not saying that it can't be taught, but
sure.
there is something to the idea of having been shaped by cooler climates, let's say. It's a classic, you know, simple way of looking at it.
Yeah, you probably have more foresight because you have to save your belongings, so that would kind of roll over into having maybe a savings account in a bank.
And that's why it's so absurd to bring, like, you know, Somalis to Sweden, which all of a sudden are not even taught that, like, hey, if you have, like, a burqa on all the time, you don't even go out in the sun, you're not going to get any vitamin D, you're going to get sick. But you can't talk about those things because that's racism, right? That shows that there's a difference between us. And these people feel totally out of place in a country like Sweden. It's dark 6 months out of the year. And I've seen some of these people, they just go cuckoo. It's like not their environment.
Sad, right?
You know, of course. Sad. They have the sad lights
thing.
And stuff. Yeah, absolutely. But at least a white person is more equipped to it. And evolutionary, we have a better opportunity or better ability to adjust to those differences, you know?
Sure. There are going to be differences like that from just a biological perspective. You might get a blood disease if it went the other direction, you know?
Right, exactly.
I always wondered, is Pac-Man Islamophobic?
Is it a burqa there on? Yeah, the ghost. Right? Yeah, it could be. Is that a kippa,
like
maybe?
A beekeeper isn't, you know, very confused.
Hey, Ryan, we're going to take a break in a little bit here, and I'm going to continue talking more with you about many of these things. Before we take a break and just, I want to plug your site a little bit and people should know how they can support you and in the light of what happened to Vimeo and everything like that. But do you think before we do that, is the days of criticizing, I guess we should extend the conversation then and not just talk about, let's say, Zionism or Israel, but even just globalism overall, which is more encompassing than that. Are those days over online, on YouTube, on the biggest site? What's going to happen in the future, do you think?
Yeah, I would say it's nearly over. People are talking in code and all that, but I think, like, I'm getting my own servers and hosts, and I think you're already at that point. I'm playing catch-up, but we'll just do it from other platforms, you know. But you've never really been allowed to say that on YouTube anyway, from my experience. But in criticizing Zionism, you can do it if you do it in a leftist way. Like, there are critics of Zionism, but it's very limited. It's only about Palestine. Like, they're not going to talk about the Israeli role in the American war in Iraq or Syria, Libya, or Yemen, which I can explain how that's connected to. It's just about Palestine, and it's only like, it's without solutions, you know? It's just, okay, boycott them or something. It's the most effective thing they've come up with so far, but they're not talking so much about the lobby until recently. It's always just been, list of bad things they do, and we're sad about it, but then what, you know? But it's very limited, and it's the kind of right-wing criticism of getting, what about Israel's nukes? What about their foreign policy? What about all the subsidies and money we give them, and da-da-da-da-da-da? So it's kind of a limited hangout, and always has been, on universities and stuff, and that's starting to change because of social media, so of course they brought the hammer down on social media, so... I think you're going to see more diversity in social media. The same way MySpace was like the most popular site on the internet. It was up there with Google, Yahoo, MySpace, and now it's no one uses it, right? I think Facebook's going that direction already.
Looks like it. Right? Yeah.
If people are going to Minds and VK and whatever, and they just go to Facebook for the messenger now because it's just nothing but advertisements and liberal propaganda. And if you do see anything right-wing, it's like extremist right-wing. It's not like a serious conservative principle or something. So it's just garbage, and people are migrating away already. I think that's happening. YouTube's going to be harder. I mean, Vimeo was there because of pay-per-view that YouTube doesn't really do, so that was their niche. I'm making it my life's mission to destroy that and offer my own service, at least for political videos. Can't offer it for whatever, but at least for politics. So we're going to have market responses to this. And people complain and go, oh, they're just private companies. That's free market, bro. And I always fire back, if it wasn't for the free market, you wouldn't have a YouTube or Vimeo to get banned from in the first place anyway.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
And
look at how much subsidies they got, Ryan, too, by the way, to get started.
Oh, yeah, they're not exactly.
It's not that simple. No.
They get favoritism and regulation, too. I call it anarcho tyranny, laws for some and not for others.
That's right, exactly. And it's done to steer things very specifically in a certain direction of what benefits what at what time. Look at how there was some proof of CIA involvement in the early days of Google and that they were promoting, you know, them.
Because they're not being neutral. I mean, if you're going to select who can and can't come on the platform, it's not like a phone company. It's just, okay, use the phone, say whatever you want. It's on you, not us, right? That phone company doesn't go, oh, you said hate speech, so you're not allowed to use AT&T or something. They don't do that. But social media platforms do.
maybe they will.
Yeah, right, yeah. Not give many ideas.
Exactly. But it's, how is this not meddling, right? How is it, I mean, this is, we'll round off here now because otherwise we'll go for too long. But
it ain't Russia meddling in the elections. It's Facebook.
Exactly. I want to ask you about Gab then, you know, alternative platforms, what happens there and stuff like that. We need to talk about Yemen. We haven't really gone into detail about this. We'll definitely talk about Saudi Arabia a little bit more and really get into this and examine what's happening down in Yemen. And you were talking about that they're actually seeking to build a port here down in the southeastern portion of Yemen, which is, of course, very, very beneficial to them. And the war, the starvation catastrophe that's happening doesn't get much attention. So very important stuff coming up in a second. But tell us about the ANC report. You're still on YouTube. Are you going to remain there, do you think? And tell us about where people can reach your stuff.
I'm still on YouTube because I pull my punches. So I have YouTube because it just took so long to build up and have so many followers, and I usually use it to redirect them to Vimeo, which I can't do anymore, or ANC report, or like these t-shirts I sell, and I do that through YouTube because it's, I think it's like 42,000 or so followers on there. I had a lot more before I got deleted, but we're building back up, and when you reach that 50,000 mark, you get this membership status or whatever. So my idea is use it till you lose it, but I do just treat it as extra because as I'm using that, I'm building my own. It's going to take a while. I got quite a learning curve. I'm a bit of a boomer. But I have other nerds that do know what they're doing. So ANC Report's the place to go for podcasts. And I can host my own MP3s. I'm having trouble with video because I don't have the bandwidth to deal with all the people that would watch them all so fast. But we're dealing with it. You can see that post there saying testing. It just is getting closer. That's what we're doing there.
Yeah.
That arguing with the liberal, that's the first video I hosted myself after Hellstorm, because I knew I couldn't put Hellstorm on YouTube or Vimeo.
Right.
Because, boy, you're not allowed to talk about German suffering, right? And I talk about all suffering. I'll talk about it from everybody equally. Not equally, but like, you know, suffering is suffering, you know?
That's right.
And, I had Tom Goodrich on, and I was the first person to have him on after he wrote the book Hellstorm, and then they made the video, and it quickly got oven from YouTube. So I do host that one, but there's no way I could host all my videos now. So all those things, the Jewish state, how terrorists formed nation, Israel, Syria, Israel's invisible hand, all that, they'll be back online soon. Yeah, gone, baby, gone, right?
Amazing they write that, by the way. It's like,
I know. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah. Oh, this video's, I'm like, they celebrated it too. I could see them all pouring in the comments of my YouTube videos with all this nasty stuff they were saying about me. Like, this affects my family, my children. Like,
yeah.
And for what? You know, for defending people who are in complete poverty in Yemen and Africa and talking about wars in Ukraine and Syria and actually explaining what's happening to people. That's my crime. And it's because Palestinians are one of the groups I also defend, and boy, they can't handle that. There's nothing anti-Semitic about it. I don't hate Jews. But you know what the Israeli state does as a state and as racist Jews themselves, does is undefendable. And, if you watch that video on the lobby, there's 2 out of 4 parts up right now. You'll see exactly how they know that what they're doing is undefendable, and they make strategies to defend it anyway. They don't care.
That's right. Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, as the saying goes, if you want to find out who does rule over you, if you have any questions about that, just keep going until you find that one group that you can't criticize, and there you got it.
Kevin Alfred Strom.
That's right. Yeah, it's actually his quote. Not Voltaire.
It's Voltaire who did say something similar,
yeah.
But that was Kevin Alfred Strom.
That's right.
I lived in Charlottesville when he lived in Charlottesville. I met him and William Pierce back in the day.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I thought Dr. Pierce was, I thought he was going to be like this monster, and he wasn't at all.
Yeah. I've listened to some of his speeches.
He has these cats with no hair, but whatever. I went to West Virginia and met them, and Yeah, so that's why I always say, hey, that's Captain Alfred Strom's quote, you know.
Yep, that's right.
And is it for me?
I had him on, also on the show, actually. It was very interesting. You know, I definitely agree with some of the stuff he was talking about.
I want to see if he remembers me.
All right, we're going to take a break here then, Ryan. But, yeah, definitely check out ancreport.com. You do have your T-shirts and stuff there in the shop, right? Is that where to go?
Yeah, that should work still. Although, that, you know, I'm on my second T-shirt shop, too.
Did they show all that, too, for you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did. So that one, boycott is the videos for the advertisements are gone.
Yeah.
But the if you click that blue shirt, it should go through.
There you go. Yeah.
The shoes, I'd love for people to buy those, but I had somebody say they got the wrong size. So that's not on me. That's on the company, but you may want to go with caution. But I know the shirts work. I'm wearing one. This is from my old company. They got oven, and this is from the new one, this Boycott Israel. I know some funny ones in there. We've got Gay Frogs of Jonestown, if you know about that.
Yep, I know about that one.
$14.88 was the price, and I swear that was, like, I didn't know what that was. Just all these people kept donating $14.88 to my super chat, and I didn't know why. So I thought, oh, I'll make it like this. And I found out it was a tribute to Hulk Hogan.
Sure,
so,
sure. Yeah, I get it.
You know, he said, he said, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, drink your milk, and work and train hard every day. 14 words of HH.
There you go. All right. Let's take a break, folks. We'll be right back with Brian Dawson. Stay tuned. We're going to continue in the second part at redeyesmembers.com. Head on over there if you want to support us. And make sure you support people like Ryan, too, so they can continue with their important work. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. All right. So make sure you join us at redeyesmembers.com. Go there to sign up for a membership, tune in, and check out the second part with Ryan Dawson coming up. We also have, of course, tons of other material there for you as well. Every single show that we've done back to our start in 2006, we do exclusive shows for our members like Weekend Warrior. We also have exclusive video content for our members there. So definitely head on over there. Make sure that you support us and sign up so that we can continue doing what we're doing. It is an uphill battle, an increasingly uphill battle with hacks, with accounts shut down, with shadow banning and blocking on some of the major social media platforms and stuff like that. So sign up. Make sure that we can continue. Make sure that we can pay salaries for our employees and basically continue producing good content. So head on over to redeyesmembers.com. Thank you so much for your support, ladies and gentlemen. Can't thank you enough. And with your help, we can, of course, continue doing this vital and important work of remaining a dissident in an era of unprecedented censorship and opposition. So thank you so much. We'll see you at redeyesmembers.com.